Hi, I'm Nick Gregoriadis, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 14 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. No episode last week because just been extremely busy with a bunch of stuff, a bunch of life admin and travel and seminars and stuff like that. So I was unable to get an episode done, but I think it's going to be made up for with this one, which is Daniel Strauss. You know, Daniel Strauss is a kid I met when he was about 15 years old. I was teaching at Rogers Academy in London, and he was a young white or blue belt. I can't actually remember when I met him, but he was a skinny kid, you know, just like an average looking kid. And I remember the thing about him, he was very talented technically, but the thing that surprised me most about Daniel is I turned around one day a couple of years later, he was maybe 19 or 20, and the guy was just huge. He had gone through this major transformation physically, gone from being a regular guy to being a well-built like specimen. And that's also when his jiu-jitsu started to really take off. And he owes it all to his conditioning routine, I think. He'll be the first to admit that. And I'm a big believer in the importance of conditioning and preparing your body and maximizing your abilities before you even step on the mat. And in the show, we go into what Daniel believes are the most important exercises you need for off the mat supplementary jiu-jitsu training. I think you guys will get a lot out of it. Before you listen, please consider checking out our sponsor, the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store, which has a whole bunch of amazing merchandise. We've got fantastic gis. If you haven't yet seen our Seeker line of gis, they're just the next level. We've got a licensed artwork by Cameron Gray built into the inner rash guard line, and you have to see it to believe it. I think there's only a few of those left. We have belts, or our best-selling Journey Jiu-Jitsu belts. We have pretty wicked rash guards. We've got online instructional materials, like everything you need for the jiu-jitsu lifestyle. It's all in there. And if you guys use the coupon code podcast, you will get 10% off anything. So just head on over to store.jiu-jitsu-brotherhood.com and choose some cool stuff. And it really helps to support the show. And without further ado, here is episode 14 of the JJB podcast, Daniel Strauss. Enjoy. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood podcast. I have a good friend of mine with me today. Most of you in the grappling world will already know him. His name is Daniel Strauss. He goes by the alias of the Raspberry Ape. He is a very interesting guy and an excellent grappler, and he's accomplished a hell of a lot for someone as young as he is. Daniel, thanks for coming on the show, my brother.
No, thank you very much for having me. It seems that the technology gods were not too keen on us chatting today, but we disregarded that completely and we worked it out anyway.
Bro, if I'm honest, out of all the hundreds of podcasts I've recorded over my lifetime, this was the most difficult one to make happen. Seriously, I thought my theory was that the universe didn't want it to happen because it knew that the meeting of our minds
would be too powerful.
Yep, it would cause a rip in the fabric of space-time.
That's exactly what I thought as well.
That's it. Because we're talking about big, important things like jiu-jitsu and strength training and God knows what else we're going to get into.
Exactly.
What's been happening with you lately, bro?
Not too much, mate. I've been pretty busy. I've been doing this seminar tour for sort of the last, since sort of March time. So it's been pretty brutal. I've been teaching it sort of every weekend. And then obviously I had Polaris last month as well. So it's been pretty nonstop recently, but this weekend's the last weekend officially of the tour. So then I can kind of chill out a little bit, focus a bit more on my training and stuff like that. It's quite hard to do when you're only kind of compressed to 4 or 5 days a week.
No, I completely understand that, dude.
I'm sure, you know, you're similar, aren't you? You know, you're traveling around a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, probably very similar, as you said. Now I want to know, dude, what happened with homeboy Jake Shields, because I honestly thought you were just gonna rip that guy's shoulder out of its socket.
I tried, mate.
I know you did try.
To be honest with you, I really felt that Jake was not when I compete in jiu-jitsu competition or tournament or super fight, I'm really a lot less interested in the result than I am about the performance, you know, and I've kind of always felt that way. It's not a mentality that a lot of people, that I expect a lot of people to also follow, especially if they're kind of trying to build themselves up as more of a competitive grappler than I am. You know, I'm a lot more interested in sort of putting on a good show and making sure that my matches are entertaining. So I think that I just went into that match with a lot more of that playing on my mind than I feel that Jake did. So I think he kind of did what he felt he needed to do to secure the match, whereas I was hoping that there would be a little bit more opportunity for us both to put on a, you know, have a bit more movement, make the match a bit more dynamic. In terms of how it went down, you know, we stood up for a little bit. He was surprising me that he wasn't really trying to do any takedowns. He was just sort of pushing me around and kind of, to be honest, a couple of dick moves at times. We were getting to the edge of the mat, and when the referee would call time, he'd kind of give me an extra shove off the mat. So I don't know sort of what he was going for, whether he was trying to get me rolled up sort of like an AJ match, but, you know, there was no bad blood between us, so I didn't really see the point of it. But he wasn't shooting much for takedowns. I don't know whether he was wary of me attacking the guillotine as he shot in. But for whatever reason, after you know, I've been in matches where no one's really... My last match before Jake Shields, I fought a guy called Lucio Sergio up north, and neither of us were too keen on attacking aggressively for takedowns, and it ended up being a pretty boring match where we spent a lot of the match standing up, and I just didn't want a repeat of that. So after a couple of minutes, I felt that if he wasn't aggressively going to attack the takedown like I had in my match with AJ, which was perfect, him trying to take me down so I could be in the position that I wanted to be in, I just thought I'd sit down into guard and try and draw him in there. And then as soon as he came into my guard, he pretty much just shut, you know, after an initial sort of scramble, I think he felt that my guard wasn't as easy to pass as he thought it was going to be, and that I was going to be a little bit more aggressive off my back. And from then, he just completely shut down for the entire 15-minute match. You know, his arms were locked underneath my arse, which, as you know, it's just not a position that is particularly dynamic and looking to pass too aggressively. He did pass the guard a couple of times, and then I... regained guard pretty much immediately. He wasn't able to do anything from there, but the only times he regained guard is when I was opening my guard because nothing was going on, you know. So even I think if I was had the same mentality as him, which is I just didn't want anything to happen to try and secure the match, then I don't actually think he'd be able to pass the guard. If I tried to play the closed guard for the entirety of the match, it would be even more boring than it was, and I don't think he would have passed. It was only when I tried to come around to play the butterfly guard or open up a little bit to attack that he was actually to get anything. So it felt incredibly frustrating. You know, I was kind of when I'm in these matches, I see it not only from my own perspective as one of the competitors, but I also see it from the perspective of people watching, you know? So I'm thinking during the AJ match at Polaris 2, which was a really exciting match, I was competing, but at the same time I was thinking, holy fucking shit, this is entertaining. You know, I had that thought in my mind during the match, not just afterwards. And I kind of had the polar opposite thought during the match with Jake. I thought, fuck, this is really boring and this is really frustrating because he just wasn't allowing me to do anything. So I was just trying to play the rubber guard, you know, from close guard. He was so shut down from close guard that there was nothing that I was going to do, nothing he was going to do. So I was trying to play sort of Sean Williams guard, rubber guard positions, trying to bring the leg in front of the head to go for omoplatas and set up triangles. At the end of the day, if I'm honest with you, I'm not upset about the decision because it wouldn't have changed the performance regardless. You know, whose hand get raised at the end doesn't really mean much if the performance is the same. But I do felt like I felt when the match ended that I'd done enough to win, considering that I was the only one who actually went for any submissions and it is a submission only show. So he got the decision on more dominant grappling. I think for two guard passes, even though he didn't do anything with them, two guard passes and a takedown. But at the end of the day, what scores more, aggressively trying to attack submissions or aggressively trying to pass the guard? So, you know, that's up for debate. But yeah, you know, it was very frustrating for obviously I was happy to have the opportunity to throw down against someone like that, but it was frustrating that we didn't see a little bit more versatility in the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, this brings up a pretty interesting topic within martial arts, functional martial arts competitions and grappling and jiu-jitsu in particular, because, you know, you spoke about the result and the performance and the difference between the two things. And very often it's the really boring, ultra technical shit that gets you the result, 50-50 being a case in point, you know. And that usually is on the other end of this, of like, if you look at a binary spectrum, when on one side you have competition effective stuff, and on the other end you have flashy, fun to watch, performance enhancing stuff.
Sure.
They're usually like on opposite ends of the spectrum. Sometimes they overlap. Sometimes you can see a flashy move that's effective, but it's not that common. And I think that is a crisis that grappling is overcoming, I guess, with things like EBI, the EBI rule set, which is trying to force a little bit more action. Because goddamn, dude, it's a story I often relate. When I was a brown belt, I competed in the World Champs at the IBJJF World Champs in Long Beach. And then I went back the next day to the black belt divisions. And, dude, it was so fucking boring. I just left.
Yeah, I've done the same.
You know, it was so...
I've literally done the same when I've left. I've left the Worlds because the matches were so boring.
You know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder, like, what that means and what's going to happen, because... I mean, you saw this thing. I mean, this isn't a new question or a new debate about grappling. It's been going on for at least 10 years, but I think it's coming to a head now, because I can never pronounce the dude's name. It's Vinny Magalhaes.
Magalhaes, yeah.
I don't know if you saw that article when he just said jiu-jitsu's become like this pussified, weird game because of all the rules and stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, I don't necessarily agree with him, but... it definitely is becoming very, very specialized. And what are your thoughts on that, Daniel?
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic. It's one that I kind of think about quite a lot, because for me, obviously, what I'm really looking to, or one of the things that I'm looking to accomplish, as most of us as grapplers are, is to kind of increase the popularity of the sport and... you know, make the sport of grappling or Brazilian jiu-jitsu appeal to the wider audience. And that's kind of in everyone's favor. The more people that it appeals to, the more money is involved in the sport, the more big companies come and start to sponsor events, and it begins to grow and gyms see more students in them. So it's kind of within everyone's interest to have the sport spread as wide and far and appeal to as many people as possible. But then the issue that you have with that, this sort of fundamental issue with Brazilian jiu-jitsu, is that you're really going to struggle to appeal to the masses because of the how aesthetically unpleasing some high-level Brazilian jiu-jitsu matches can be. And I'm not sure if it's a rules issue, because you can watch some very, very exciting matches under an identical rule set to which you watch some very, very boring matches. I think it a lot more comes down to an individual's mentality and also the matchmaking. The problem that you have, and I think you have this in the majority of sports where you have a direct competition, so against each other directly, opposed to, you know, running next to each other, where you're not, even though you're competing against each other, you're not actually... So for example, if you were doing a running race, the closer the race is, the more exciting it is. If you had a race between two people, and by the time the first person hits the finish line, the person in second place is halfway down the track, that's a really, really boring match. A really exciting running race is when they get to the line and it's a photo finish. But that's because they're not competing directly against each other. When you compete directly against each other, the opposite is almost true. The closer you are matched, the less exciting the match is going to be, because you're going to cancel each other out. And that's what I feel happened in my match with Jake, is that sort of a similarity in either stylistically, not that we have similar styles, but just so happened that our two styles cancelled each other out, and you end up with a very, very static game. If you compare that to someone whose style doesn't conflict with Jake, so for example, the AJ match, which still wasn't the most exciting match. You know, I don't think that Jake Shields is ever going to be in a very, very dynamic match, because his style... I don't believe has the ability, or him personally is never going to allow himself to get into a real dynamic, scrappy match in the same way that a Gary Tonnen would do it. But But with the match with AJ, because AJ is a lot looser and didn't have the ability to retain the guard as well, you saw a lot more movement, guard passes, mount takes, submission attempts, and then obviously a little bit of slapping involved as well, which always makes it more exciting than you did in our match. So I think it's a lot less to do with the rules, because you can have EBI rules. The only difference between EBI and something like Polaris is the overtime. You know, the actual 10 minutes is identical. The rules are the same. They allow heel hooks and knee reaps and twisters and all of the other stuff that Polaris allows. So actually, you can have just as a boring match in the 10 minute before overtime in EBI as you can do in the 15 minutes entirety of Polaris. So you actually have the opposite problem in EBI, that people will stall. If they can't beat someone, they're better off stalling and waiting for the overtime. And then in the overtime, they can either they're fresher or they have better cardio. Their output's been less during the match, which is one of the things that I came across when I competed in EBI, is that my opponent didn't do anything during the match and I was aggressively attacking. So by the time we got to overtime, I was knackered and he was fresh. Or they just kind of train those overtime positions, those back escapes and back attack positions really, really aggressively. So they're looking to get themselves into that position at the end of the match. So you can still end up with, even though you get a definitive ending, it doesn't mean the destination to that ending was particularly exciting. So I think in terms of making jiu-jitsu more appealing and more exciting, it comes far more down to the mentality of the individual than it does necessarily of the rule set of the of the competition that they're competing under.
Well, that makes sense. You know, it's closely related to another topic that I've been thinking about for the last week. Which is, you know, in jiu-jitsu, if you want to have the most fun when you're training, I really believe the phrase that came to my mind is that you have to give to get, you know, and I'm speaking specifically about, you have to give a little bit of movement or a little bit of space, or you might even have to give a little bit of your position away.
Yeah, 100%,
to,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying, right?
And, yeah, 100%. And
that for me is not only the worst kind of match to watch when, like, there's two guys who, for whatever reason, there's no give,
yeah,
and it becomes very stale. It's also the worst kind of sparring to engage in.
100%.
You know what I'm saying? It's fucking boring, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it's the complete opposite to me of, like, one of those, like, dynamic, flowing sparring sessions.
I think it's a lot less common to have that in sparring, because, like I said, you know, it's the mentality going in. So when people go to a competition, they very often come in with a mentality of, whatever happens, I don't want to lose this. That still happens in the gym sometimes, but the stakes are so much lower that the chance of that happening is significantly lower. You have to take a very special individual to be so intent on not losing a sparring round that they're just going to shut down and stall the entire time.
That's, you'd be surprised how many of those dudes I meet.
Yeah, I know, but normally when that happens in my gym, I shout at the motherfucker to get moving, you know, this isn't, you know, let's do something.
Yeah, exactly. I use it a lot, like when I'm in a bad position even, I know that like giving something could lead me into an even worse position, but I also know that the space that he's going to make when he moves to capitalize on what I've given him is also a potential window for me to escape or improve my position. It's almost like I always like taking shit to the more philosophical side of things, but it's the same with life. You know, you gotta like you gotta meet the universe halfway. You gotta take some risks. You gotta kind of make yourself vulnerable.
Yeah.
If you might get burnt and you might lose and you might fail, but also that's the only way you're gonna succeed. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think go on.
Well, I was gonna shift it a little bit. But I'd like to hear your answer.
Basically, just that I agree with you. You know, and I think I do see those similarities. It's sort of it all comes down to risk taking. The whole thing that you can either play it safe and not give anything and potentially not get anything, and then sometimes you've got to take that risk. And if you get something, then there's a possibility that you'll end up paying for it, but there's a possibility that you're able to reap the rewards as well.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's a big theme. I'm always reminded of that saying, a ship in the harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are for.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that saying. And, you know, I look at some of my buddies who've lived much more, how do I put it, traditional lifestyles
sure,
to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes what really pisses me off is they complain about the fact that I don't live the traditional lifestyle and the implications that has. But then if there's something risky that's required, they'll ask me to do it for them.
Sure.
Do you know what I
yeah.
mean?
Because yeah, totally.
Yeah. So that really pisses me off.
Mad. Maybe some people aren't boats. Maybe they're lighthouses, you know?
Hey, there we go. I really like the way your mind thinks. Yeah, that's awesome, dude. My brother, I want to know, you know, the main reason I brought you on here is not just because I like you and enjoy talking to you.
That's what I thought it was.
It's, you know, like I always choose my guests because I feel that they have something to give back to the listeners. And, you know, you're a very smart guy and you've got a lot of stuff to share. I think the thing that the listeners could get the most out of is you're known as someone who has focused on the physical culture element of martial arts training, and in particular grappling training. I know that you're ridiculously strong. I mean, your strength weight ratio is off the charts. And the interesting thing about you is you don't do the traditional methods of strengthening that grapplers and martial artists have employed, which include, you know, things like lifting weights or the CrossFit style training or calisthenics or powerlifting and those kinds of things. You for me, what fascinates me is that you are using a lot of the old time strongman training methods, including things like club bells and bending like iron pegs and stuff now? Is that a new thing?
Well, I was a bit more into that a little while ago, but I'm trying to get back into it now, yeah.
Okay. So I guess, how important do you think your focus on these strength training regimes and conditioning, how important of a role has it played in where you are today and your ability on the mat at the moment?
It definitely plays for me personally. It's played a very, very big role. I think that's evident. And the reason why so many people see me as kind of the guy to go to when it comes to sort of, I'd say, less traditional methods of strength training, and especially the grip training and stuff like that. So it's definitely played a big role for me. It doesn't necessarily mean that I think that it should play an equally large role for everyone else. I really do believe in sort of individuality, and the needs and desires for everyone as an individual is very, very different. Just because I do something doesn't mean that I think that every grappler should do it, or that even every grappler would be able to benefit as much as some others would from the stuff that I've done. Mm-hmm. For me personally, it has made a very big difference. You know, I first got interested in the strength training probably coming up to about 9 or 10 years ago now. Mm-hmm. I just read a book called Dinosaur Training by Brooks Kubik. I've mentioned it loads of times on, you know, when people ask on my podcast and stuff. And that got me interested and sort of, and it does talk about the dinosaur part of that training is referring to sort of the old school, you know, because obviously dinosaurs are old. So looking back opposed to all of the modern stuff, and a lot of the problem these days is that people try to, everyone's looking for a fad, you know. Everyone's looking for the next big thing, you know. The Smith machines or shake weights or you know, all of this crazy stuff. Everyone's trying to sell you something, and to sell you something, you can't sell something that it goes back so far that you can't put a price tag on it. You know, you can't sell the idea of doing simple barbell exercises. You have to create something, and then you have to try and convince people that this is actually the best way to do it. But the reality is, the best way to do something is probably the stuff that's been being done for hundreds of years, and in some cases, thousands of years. You know, this has like a measurable history of being of these things being effective. So I'm not necessarily against some of the more modern methods. I'm open to look at and to analyze all of the stuff that's going on, but I'm not going to fall down these rabbit holes of someone coming out trying to sell me a product or a training idea that is cutting edge just based on the fact that this science and, you know, this model is endorsing it and all of that stuff. So I prefer to keep it a little bit more basic. What interests me about the sort of strongman training, sort of the old time stuff, is if you get into it and you read it, most of these performing strongmen were actually wrestlers as well. The culture of the performing strongman, you know, these are people who made a living going round in circus shows, going to theatres, sometimes filling stadiums. You know, it was massive back in the day, in the golden era of professional strongmen, and not strongmen how we look at these days, but professional old time strongmen. Back in those days, almost all of them were wrestlers. So the connection between sort of the grappling arts and the performing strongman culture is really, really closely linked together. So because of that, a lot of the stuff that they're doing is very relevant for us as grapplers. In terms of stuff that I do, I do follow all of the stuff that other people do. I'm not just doing unconventional training. So I still do squats and I still do bench press and I still do overhead press and I do pull-ups and I do rows and stuff like that. But I like to supplement, you know, all of that stuff I see as the foundation of your body and of the strength of your body. It's the foundation. You cannot start specializing in something. If you look at it like being a doctor, okay? You have to go to university, you have to get your degree, you have to go to medical school, you have to qualify as a doctor. And once you've done that, then you can start to specialize in, or surgery, or you want to specialize in cardiovascular system, or you want to specialize in other things. But without that foundation that you get in the first, in the first 7 years of getting your medical degree, you can't go and specialize and do these specific things. And it's the same for strength and conditioning. You can't just wake up one day and start doing stone lifting and bending metal and doing all of the other crazy stuff. And not just stuff that I do, but crazy stuff that anyone does. You see someone out there doing muscle ups and spinning around bars with all of the crazy calisthenic stuff. I don't believe that you can just go out there and start doing it if you don't have any sort of physical foundation. Now, for some people, they've played sport their entire lives, and actually their body has a pretty good foundation, even if they've never picked up a barbell before. But there's a lot of people, especially in jiu-jitsu, there's an interesting trend in jiu-jitsu. I don't know if you find the same, that a lot of people who do jiu-jitsu have actually never played any other sport.
I have noticed that, and I think everything you've said is very valid. I'm at the point now where there's two main principles I follow when it comes to my own supplemental training. And the first one is, if an exercise is easy to do, it's hard to benefit. And if it's hard to do, it's easy to benefit. And that was, I learned indirectly from a very interesting coach. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Like, a lot of the stuff that we're presented with today, it's marketed as being easy, and there's a reason for that, and that's people don't like doing difficult stuff.
They 100%
like doing what it takes.
They want the quick fix.
Yeah. So they want to go jump on a stationary bike and watch CNN and pedal for 15 minutes and think that that's going to get them fit, whereas what it probably takes is doing some heavy squats or bending yourself into a really difficult yoga position and opening your body or opening your hips or whatever it is, and it requires a little bit of discomfort, or sometimes a lot of discomfort. You know, so that's my one guiding principle. And then the next one is, this is for life more than just conditioning, but for conditioning, I think it's very important. It's the concept, inscribed at that oracle at Delphi. It says, know thyself. And I think that there's so many different training protocols and paradigms and methods and pieces of equipment. And I think the way you can get into trouble is, if you do something that someone else says is good for you, and it might not be particularly well suited to your body, it not only might it not benefit you, it might injure you. But the difficult thing is to know yourself and know your body and know how it works. You have to do your undergraduate degree, as you said.
Yeah.
You've got to go and try weightlifting, and then you've got to go try some calisthenic stuff, and you've got to go try yoga, and you've got to go experiment with all this shit, and you will eventually figure out what your body responds well to and what you can handle and what causes you to progress quickly. And I guess there is no real shortcut, is there?
No, there isn't a shortcut. Realistically, you have to put the work in. And I actually think that you're kind of bringing up this point, which is super valid, and I've spoken about before, which is that people want this quick fix. They want the most bang for buck exercise. You know, that's what people ask me when they ask me about grip training and stuff like that. Like, what's the best bang for your buck exercise you can do? What's the one that I can get the most benefit out of for the least amount of work? And obviously coming with that mentality of doing, I want to do the least amount of work for the most amount of benefit. It's sort of the wrong mentality to come into for strength and conditioning, because it implies that you don't want to do the work. But at the same time, if you actually think about it, this is all playing off of a really, really instinctive mentality that humans are naturally going to have.
Conservation of energy, basically.
Like, we want to be efficient, right? So why, when you ask what's the most benefit that I can get out of the smallest amount of effort, when you're doing jiu-jitsu, that's exactly what you're being trained to look for. Right? So you're being trained all the time. You know, we want to be efficient as hunter-gatherers. If there's a slow old deer 20 meters away and there's a fast young one 100 meters away, which one are you going to go for? You're always going to go for the one that's going to be easier, that is still going to give you similar or equal results. So I think it's a really natural instinct to want to find something that's easy to do to get a benefit. And that's what these companies play off of when they tell you that you can get shredded in 5 weeks by doing this one crazy trick and all of that bollocks. But the reality comes down to it, which is, you know, and one of the my favorite expressions that I like to base a lot of my training off of is, if you want extreme results, you have to do extreme things. You know, it very simply comes down to that. If you look at these crazy bodybuilders who look like freaks, they train like freaks. So these people going to the gym and eating 3,000 calories a day and doing a couple of pump up sessions and being surprised why they don't look like Ronnie Coleman, you're not going to look like Ronnie Coleman, because he's doing the shit that you can even dream of doing.
Or
can afford to do it in some cases, you know, but that's the reality. I think naturally people look for the easiest way out, but that's definitely going to have a ceiling on it. At the same time, you need to be prepared when it comes to your body doesn't care about how efficient you want things to be. Your body is only going to react to the stimulus that you put into it. If you don't push your body, you know, when you get stronger or when you get bigger, when you get faster, that is your body panicking, thinking that the stuff that you've put it through in either on the mat or in the weights gym, what you've put it through, your body is scared that if it comes across that again, it won't be able to survive.
Adaptation.
Therefore, it's going to change its anatomy and it's going to change its physiology to be able to be better prepared to survive for that. When you put a 200 kilo weight on your back and go down into a squatted position and then push that weight back up into a standing position, your body is not enjoying that. Your body thinks it's getting fucking crushed by 200 kilos, which is exactly what's happening. So your body reacts and it goes, we better get these legs stronger. We better get this back stronger, because if we have 200 kilos on our back again, we might not get out scot-free like we just did. And that's how you get bigger and that's how you get stronger. So there's almost this contradiction between your mind looking for the most efficient and easy way and your body saying, if it's easy, I ain't going to bother changing.
Okay. So I absolutely love that breakdown. It's a fantastic image of or analogy that you've used. Well, I guess it's not even an analogy. It's the fact your body's a stress responsive, adaptive organism. Yeah. So having said that, and you and I have just told the audience that there are no real shortcuts. And I've just said that, you know, you're going to need to spend as much time experimenting and learning to know thyself. A lot of guys listening to this are busy and, you know, they might be 35-year-old men with families and they've only got a few hours a week to add to strength and conditioning. So I'm going to ask you a difficult question.
Okay.
So you are sent off to a desert island with a guy that you have to train for a jiu-jitsu match. He knows all the techniques and there's going to be no coaching of actual jiu-jitsu techniques, no sparring or anything like that. Your job is just to do strength and conditioning. And you've got a year to get him in the best shape possible. But here's the catch. You've got any equipment you could possibly want, but you can only choose five specific exercises or movements to get them into the shape. What would they be, those five?
Okay. Yeah, it's a very strange scenario. I'm not sure in real life how that could possibly happen. But
we could make it happen, bro. It's a reality TV show waiting to happen.
You could actually, yeah. So I can have any equipment, as much equipment as I want, but we're only allowed to do five exercises.
Yes.
And we can't do any sort of sparring or anything like that.
No.
Okay. So yeah, you're looking for sort of my favorite exercises. And you know, I do have a pretty simple answer for that, to be honest.
Before you continue, when you say your favorite exercises, it's not exactly your favorite exercise, because
you get what I'm saying. But really, my favorite exercises are the ones that I believe are most beneficial.
Yes, exactly. You know?
So I'm not, when I say a favorite exercise, it's not the most enjoyable exercise necessarily. Not the one that I enjoy the most, but my favorite one in terms of what I believe the benefits are that can be reaped from it. I'm going to get them doing pull-ups.
Okay.
I think pull-ups.
Any specific variation of pull-ups?
Me personally. Uh-huh. I like, and I've spoke about this more in depth on one of my, or a little, very briefly, a bit more in depth in on my Polaris video, one of the countdowns for that, when I was talking about the grip strength, and I'm going to start putting out some videos explaining all of these concepts a little bit more. But I like to use a thick-handled neutral grip pull-up, so palms facing each other and a thick handle, which allows you to wrap your hand a little bit more around it, so you end up with a bit of flexion in your forearm instead of the wrist hanging all the way down. And what that does is it builds a lot more of the hooking strength in your arm instead of just building the squeezing strength in your fingers. And that hooking strength, I believe, is very, very useful for being able to control opponents on the mat. So in terms of pull-ups, if we had a pull-up bar and we could only do one variation of pull-ups, obviously the best thing that could happen is I say pull-ups and you can do every variation of pull-ups. But if I could only do one variation of pull-ups, it's going to be thick-handled neutral pull-ups with a hook grip, thumbless hook grip, trying to engage as much of the forearms as possible.
Awesome.
So the pull-ups are a great exercise. It really does work a lot of the body. If you do that, it's engaging a lot of the forearms, a lot of the bicep, a lot of the shoulders, the lats. And actually, if you're doing a lot of pull-ups, it hits the abs incredibly as well. So that's a very good exercise. That's number one. Yeah, if I could only do one exercise for the rest of my life, I'd do pull-ups without a shadow of a doubt, I'd say.
Okay.
And then you could add weight potentially onto those as well if you wanted to tie coconuts to your nuts or something. I don't know. The second one would probably be farmer's walks.
Wow. Okay. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, farmer's walks is in my opinion one of my favorite exercises. Loaded carries in general, so walking with weight, regardless of how you're holding it or what it is really one of the best exercises in my opinion for sort of building all round functional strength. I hate using the word functional strength, but right now functional strength is referring to sort of a full connective structural strength for grappling. So when you're walking with something, unlike when you're standing with something, so you put a squat bar on your shoulders and you stand up with it and maybe you go up and down, it's obviously you're using a lot of your body, but it's a very, very static position. You're based in the ground, so in terms of the stabilizing muscles, you're only stabilizing yourself in one position. However, when you pick up that bar, if you were to put that same bar on your shoulders and go for a walk, every time you take a step, your entire body's moving. Every single muscle from your toes down to your shoulders, or even probably up to your head, is having to engage in different ways as you walk. So picking up heavy weights and walking with them is going to be engaging it in the entire structure of your body in a really, really effective way. So farmer's walks are a massive one for me because they really engage the abs a lot. They're working the legs, they're working the glutes, but massively really, really working the forearms and the grip as well. When a lot of people ask me, what's one exercise that you do for grip? And I tell them every time it's farmer's walks. That is the first exercise that I started doing that initially gave me my strong base in grip training. That was the doing farmer's walks 3 times a week, you know? So that would be the second one.
So your number three favorite desert island grappling preparation exercise.
Yeah, so number one's pull-ups. Number two is farmer's walks. To be honest with you, I'm going to go with number three. I'm going to go with loaded sandbag carries, kind of as we were talking about before, because I just think that bear hug position just builds incredible strength, you know, for pulling. So that'll probably be my number three. I guess you've got, if you're not rolling, you've got to do some sort of cardio. I'm not particularly well known for doing a lot of cardio because I don't really like it and don't do much. But, you know, if you're on a desert island, swimming's pretty good. You know, swimming's pretty good. Otherwise,
you take swimming over running?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Okay.
100%, man. I hate running. I hate running. I think, it comes down to an individual's ability to do so physiologically. I was having this chat with my buddy yesterday, actually. I genuinely believe that when it comes, like, we are designed, undeniably, we as humans are designed to run. Yeah? But the thing is, we are designed to run from a very early age and never stop running. So if you're running around as a kid and then you carry on running recreationally or for fitness or for fun into your sort of late childhood, into your early teens, into your late teens, into your 20s, into your 30s, and you never stop running, then running's great. The problem that you have is when you have someone who stopped running when they were a kid, you know, whenever kids stopped running, and they never started running again until they started jiu-jitsu when they were 35. And then they start pounding the pavement and their knees get fucked up and their back gets fucked up because your body hasn't, you know, almost like micro evolved. You know, when you're growing up, you are evolving. If you are Roger Gracie and you're doing grappling from the age of 5, your body will evolve to be a grappler's body. If you carry on running through all of your childhood into adulthood, then your body is evolving as it grows. It's not evolving because there's not, you know, genetic, there's not natural selection and stuff, but you get the idea. You are adapting your anatomy, in my opinion, to be able to continue to run. The people who don't do that and then try and take up running, that's the people who get their knees messed up, who get their backs messed up, who get their hips messed up, and it can be a big problem. I think that there's possibly a way to work yourself back into it, but I see running personally, especially on pavement, I see running as probably more harm than good in the long term, unless your body's adapted to that.
That's interesting. Interesting. I mean, I've lately been heading down to the beach because I'm staying close to the beach and just doing some short distance running in the sand, like a little bit of sprinting.
Yeah, so I think I think that sprinting's really, really good. I think it's sort of like super long distance running can be really harmful. You know, degenerate the knees and stuff like that. It's a lot of pound on the pavement. And us as grapplers, we just need to look after our knees more than the average person does.
Oh, tell me about it.
We all know this. We need to look after the knees. So I would never tell someone unless they came to me and that, you know, I run every day and I feel great and my knees are fine, then I tell them, carry on running and you'll probably have good cardio for grappling. But if someone came to me, I'm never going to advise them to do running for cardio because you end up, you know, there's the biggest rule about supplementary training for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, for grappling, for any sport. Do not get injured doing your fucking 100%. Supplementary training.
100%,
like you, if you do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, especially if you do it seriously or if you compete in it, you will get injured. Okay, that's undeniable. Yeah, yeah. Everyone will pick up injuries. It's the nature of the sport. It's a chaotic sport. You will get injured doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's fine. You will get injured doing whatever sport you do, whether that sport is running, whether that sport is weightlifting, whether that sport is tennis, whether that sport is football. You will get injured playing your sport. That's okay. You can't avoid it. But getting injured doing the thing that's meant to be helping you do that sport is unacceptable. So that comes to running, that comes to any lifting or strength and conditioning you're doing. You know, I've made this mistake. I fucked my back up doing lifting. That is stupid. I don't want to see other people do that. You should not be injuring yourself doing your supplementary training. That's not to say that you can never injure yourself because it will happen, but you need to be keeping yourself healthy doing your supplementary training so you can do your real training for the sport that you want to do.
I agree with you. So we got, first one was farmer's walks, is that correct?
Pull-ups.
Yeah,
pull-ups.
Then we got
farmer's walks, sandbag carries.
Then we got a cardio component. Some form of cardio,
I'd probably say either sprints, swimming, or assault bike is one that I've been using a lot recently. Well, not okay. a lot, but I've so started using a little bit. You know, like an air bike.
Mm-hmm,
And I'd say the one that you'd pick of those three is the one that hurts your body the least. You know, not that's easiest, but the one that does the least damage to your body. If you can do sprints mm-hmm. and your knees are fine and your back's fine, do sprints. Swimming is a really, really great one because it's basically impossible to injure yourself swimming. There's absolutely mm-hmm. no impact whatsoever. So for anyone who has a lot of degenerative injuries, then swimming is a really, really good exercise to be able to get their cardio in.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so we got four, and number five would be?
Five's an interesting one, man. A lot of it comes down to the individual. I'd probably say, you know what? Because I didn't want to give super simple exercises like the five exercises are going to be bench press, squat, deadlift, row. You know, I didn't want it to be obvious like that because I think maybe for everyone, that's not necessarily the best thing. So on a desert island, I'm probably going to go with the final exercise. I'm going to go with sled pulling.
Wow, interesting.
Okay, because it's going to be really difficult on the sand if you get, and it doesn't even have to be a sled. I'm talking you get a long piece of rope, tie it to a harness, and stick it on a big ass tire, or stick it, you know, because dragging a tire through the sand is going to be a freaking nightmare. Big ass tire mm-hmm. or a sled or I don't know a fucking 100 coconuts tied together or some shit like that. But what I like about these pulling exercises is it brings.
I worry that maybe you've taken the desert island scenario a little bit too literally.
If you give me a scenario, I'm gonna break this shit down. I'm gonna analyze exactly what you've told me. You told me we're on a desert island, so I'm gonna think, okay, sand. That's gonna make dragging stuff very difficult. Dragging stuff's gonna be good on a desert island. But regardless of whether you're on a desert island that's tarmacked or not, it's still gonna be the same. I think that pulling. Sort of harness pulls is really, really good. And you can kind of include sled pushing into this example as well, because the mm-hmm. nice thing about this is very, very difficult, builds up a lot of lactic acid in the legs, which is something that you have to get used to for when you're grappling, because that will happen. You'll get that lactic acid build up in the legs, holding guard mm-hmm. position, shooting a lot of takedowns, standing up to pass the guard. You're going to get that tiredness in the legs. It's going to build a lot of strength in the legs. But here's the important part. We come back to those injuries. You're not bearing any weight. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you have no weight compressing into your body, which means that the chance, you know, if you start looking at deadlifts or heavy squats, if you do them correctly and you know what you're doing and your form's correct and you're proficient in it, in that case, you can get away with doing heavy squats and deadlifts without ever injuring yourself. But for the majority of people, you start putting big weights on their back or lifting big weights off the floor, and there is a chance that they would injure themselves because they're bearing a lot of weight through their back.
That makes sense to me.
With the sled,
I can't tell you how many guys I know that have injured themselves doing either squats or deadlifts. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you're the same.
Exactly. So by doing a sled push or a sled pull, a harness sled pull, where you're walking away from it, not dragging it towards you, even though dragging it is good, but walking away, I like to do this with cars. So I kind of harness myself up to a car and try and walk or run with a car. It's fucking hard, man. You know, I've done a workout. I pulled this little car up this hill and I laid on the floor of my kitchen. I couldn't move for about an hour afterwards. It's horrendous. So it really gets your heart going, really working your anaerobic system opposed to your aerobic system, because your body is starving for blood, but in the muscles, breathing more isn't going to help because your muscles are being starved of oxygen. But, you know, works a lot of strength in the legs, a lot of strength in the core and even in the upper body. And most importantly, you're not bearing any weights. So you're not going to be able to pick up any, you know, you're going to struggle to pick up many injuries doing that sort of training.
Powerful. Daniel, I love it. Like the way you think about training and conditioning is, I haven't met anyone who's got as much insight when it comes to grappling specific conditioning as you do.
Thank you, bro.
I know you've walked a very long road to get to the point where you're able to give this kind of advice, and I really, really appreciate that you've shared it with us.
No, it's my
just
pleasure.
Just to start winding things down, because I know we're struggling with this internet connection.
Yeah.
My man, what's next for you? What's on your agenda at the moment?
Okay, so at the moment, I've kind of just coming out of this really busy spell. You know, to be honest, I'm not making any excuses at all. And I kind of even mentioned it in the lead up to Polaris. But, you know, I wasn't able to train for Polaris in the way that a professional athlete would train for a professional match. You know, I wasn't doing much, much lifting. I haven't been doing much lifting at all over the past year, just because of a time issue, really, to be honest with you. And also, I was kind of trying to keep my weight down. I had the drop a little bit of weight for the last two matches that I've had this year. And a lot of that is to do with the fact that I've been traveling a lot, doing a lot of seminars and a lot of teaching. So I'm kind of coming off of the back end of that now. So I'm hoping over the next over winter to focus a little bit more on my own training, both on the mat and also off of the mat. I'm a lot lighter now than I've been in the last couple of years. So I'm going to look to try and increase my weight by doing a little bit more strength conditioning work, kind of building my strength back up. I just got squatted for the first time in about 6 months to a year, about 3 weeks ago, and I did 100 kilo squat for 5 reps and I couldn't walk for a fucking 6 days. So that gives you an indication of sort of how out of shape, well, not out of shape, but how unconditioned to the heavy lifting that I've become. So I'm going to start getting back into that and, working more in the strength conditioning stuff and also focusing a bit more and trying to get a little bit more time on the mat. As well as that, I've got a lot of other things on at the moment. I run my own tournament. I've got my own podcast going, so sort of focusing on that. I've been pretty consistent getting an episode out a week, but since Polaris I haven't been able to record anything, so I'm going to get back on sort of looking for more guests to get onto the podcast. As you know, yourself has been on twice. I think you're the only person to be on twice, but sort of keep focusing on that. And that's it, really. Basically redirect my attention a little bit more to my own training, and nice. Continuing to, I'm looking at doing more seminars next year, but until I start that kind of next tour, take a little bit of time off for myself and kind
good
of work
you.
On my
yeah,
own training.
Chill
yeah.
out for a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
So if people want to find out more about you and the work you do, where should they go? Is there a specific website you want to send them to?
Yeah. So basically, I'm relatively active on social media. On my personal profile, if you just find Daniel Strauss, and you'll be able to find a picture of my hairy ass on there, and that would be me. Not literally my hairy ass, just me hairy and an ass. So you'll be able to find me on there. I'm on Instagram at Rosbury_ape. I am on Twitter. You can get me on that, but I don't really use it. I might start using it a little bit more. I have a website, which is rosbury.com, which I'm kind of working on, and because it's not particularly functional at the moment, but it will be soon. So these are kind of a lot of the things that I'm going to start working on as I have a little bit extra time to myself.
Nice.
But yeah, best thing to find me is and also, of course, you can find my podcast, which is the Raspberry 8 podcast. Got to get a plug-in for that. The Raspberry 8 podcast you can find on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can just Google Raspberry 8 podcast.
And I just got to say, that is a very cool podcast. One of the best grappling theme podcasts. Yeah, it is indeed. I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass, as they say.
That's because you've been on it twice, though, Nick.
Well, that doesn't hurt in my
doesn't
opinion.
Hurt at all. Doesn't hurt at all.
My man, what a pleasure chatting to you. It's such a wealth of information.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate
always
it.
Always refreshing. You have a unique mind and a unique viewpoint on martial arts and life. Yeah, it's very cool. It's such a pleasure to talk to you, my brother, and thank you for coming on.
Yeah, guys, I'm sure you all enjoyed that as much as I did. Daniel was a good kid. Never ceases to amaze me how sharp his mind is for such a young dude, and how much he knows already. I mean, I'm 38 actually, just turned 38, and this is something I've been studying for a long time, is conditioning and physical culture. It's always been an interest of mine, and then I speak to a guy like Daniel Strauss, who's 11 years younger than me, and I already see how he knows a lot more than me when it comes to this topic, and it just blows my mind how knowledgeable he is. A very cool kid as well. So I hope you guys enjoyed that show. Next guest is Budo Jake, who I consider to be one of the most professional people in jiu-jitsu. He's built, I guess the only way to describe it is an empire. He's built an empire within the industry, which is very impressive. And not only that, he's a great black belt. So keep an eye out for next week's episode, Budo Jake. Until then, guys, train hard, and more importantly, train smart.